I want you to run, Tony whispered as Mira helped him out of the shelter belt and into the back seat of the SUV. Don't worry about me, okay? The first chance you get, just run. The door to the back seat was standing open. He gripped the handle, set his teeth, and swung himself up into the car with his good hand. Mira helped to lift his injured leg in after him, seeing the blackened bandage up close for the first time, and smelling dirt and sweat and urine. Lemoyne's driver patted Mira down and then escorted her around the back of the vehicle. She could barely make his face out in the dark, but as he opened the door for her and stepped aside, she smelled him too, a soapy fragrance of rose water and patchouli that almost made her sick. She climbed in beside Tony, and the driver shut the door behind her. Lemoyne was talking on his phone nearby. Mira watched through the tinted window as he paced back and forth. Experimentally, she tried the handle to see if the child lock was on. It was. The door wouldn't open. She glanced over at Tony, but his head was lolling back against the headrest, and his eyes were closed. She reached for his hand. Where are the photos? She whispered. The roll of film. Where is it? Tony's eyes didn't open.
I sent it to Mum, he said.
No, Tony, the roll of film. You showed it to me. It was in a plastic bag.
Yeah,
he said, eyes still closed.
Mum's got it. It's fine. She knows what to do.
Tony, Mira said. She gripped his hand and shook it, trying to rouse him.
I'm just so tired, Tony said.
Don't give up, she said. You can't give up.
I think I did already, he said. A little while ago. Back there.
Lemoyne ended his call and came back to the car. He spoke to his driver in a low voice for a moment, and then they peeled apart, opened their respective doors and got in. The driver put the key in the ignition, lighting up the dashboard so that Mira got a partial glimpse of his features for the first time. He was handsome, with high cheekbones and thick lashes and dark eyes. And somehow this was even more sickening to her than the smell of his soap. She held on tight to Tony's hand, wondering what he had done with the roll of film. Had he hidden it back at the shelter belt? Maybe he'd buried it. Or maybe he'd stashed it in a tree, up high, because anyone who came looking for it would probably be looking on the ground. He would have been clever like that. He would have been careful. They left all his gear behind, along with Mira's backpack and the food that she had brought to give to him, and the box of paracetamol he'd never opened, and the first aid kit she'd taken from her bicycle pannier. He wouldn't have walked away from all his stuff unless he'd had a plan. He wouldn't have come to the car so willingly. And he was probably pretending to be more delirious than he was, Mira thought, to give them the advantage of surprise later on. He was probably just pretending he had given up. It was a strategy. He had a plan. They pulled up outside the Darvish farmhouse and the driver and Lemoyne got out. Lemoyne went into the house and the driver came round to Tony's door and waited until Lemoyne reappeared again and nodded. Then the driver opened the door and reached into the back seat to help Tony out. Mira let go of Tony's hand, and Tony put his arm around the guy's neck and allowed himself to be lifted out of the car. Mira scooted across the back seat to slip out after him, but before she made it to the edge, the driver said, "No," and shut the door on her. She tried the handle, but it too was locked from the inside. She watched through the tinted glass as the driver held Tony up by the armpits, and Lemoyne reached into Tony's jacket pocket and pulled out the Ziploc bag that contained the roll of film. In the light from the porch, Mira could see that Tony's face was white with pain and exhaustion. His eyes were dull. Lemoyne checked his other pocket and withdrew a Swiss Army knife that was opened at the blade. He folded it shut, then patted Tony's trouser pockets and felt around his waistband and down his thighs and between his legs. Tony stayed limp. He had no expression on his face at all. Mira had never seen him look like that before. She had never seen anybody look like that before. At last, Lemoyne stood back and nodded again to the driver, who put Tony's arm across his shoulders and half carried him into the house. Lemoyne and Mira looked at one another through the tinted glass. Then, to Mira's surprise, he opened the door to let her out.
Go take care of him, Lemoyne said. I wasn't kidding. I don't want him to die.
So call an ambulance, Mira said.
No, said Lemoyne. I'm not going to do that.
His bones are broken. What am I supposed to do?
We'll see what we can find in the bathroom cabinet.
No, Mira said. No way.
Mira, said Lemoyne. He did this to himself, all right. He broke into a top-secret research facility. He did that. He saw what he wanted to see behind the fence. He went on the run. He jumped off a cliff. He did that all on his own. I am the innocent party here. Prove it, Mira said. You're not listening to me. I can't. Mira, the clearance on this project is way above top secret. I can't just take him to a hospital. I need time to sort this out. Prove it, she said again, hating how weak and pathetic she sounded. Lemoyne made an impatient noise. I don't have time for this, he said. Go take care of him. I've put him in the master bedroom. There's some water in the room already. We'll get him to a doctor, but tonight you're going to have to make do with what we can find in the house. My guy's name is Daniel. He'll be right outside the door all night.
Mira's chin puckered. She felt like a stupid child.
We'll talk in the morning, said Lemoyne. Go.
She went. She found Tony laid out on the Darvish's bed. His eyes were open, and he watched her as she took down a bottle of water from the dresser and broke open the seal around the cap. She sat down on the bed beside him and tipped a little into his mouth.
I told you to run, he said when he had swallowed.
Mira said nothing. Her chin was still puckered. She was trying not to cry.
You should have run, Tony said and closed his eyes.
The driver, Daniel, came in with a New Zealand Red Cross first aid kit. He set it down on the end of the bed and then reached into his pockets and dumped a handful of prescription bottles onto the lid. Then he went out again, shutting the door behind him. The tin was dusty and rusted at the rivets. It was the same standard issue kit that Mira's parents had kept when she was growing up, and she guessed that it must have come from the Darvish's garage. That reassured her. She went over to it and picked up each of the bottles in turn. Amoxicillin, hydrocodone, tramadol, extra strength acetaminophen. Each almost empty, the labels made out to Mr. Owen Darvish, Mr. Liam Darvish, Miss Rachel Darvish, Mrs. Jill Darvish. She looked at the dates. They were all expired, but the tramadol was the most recent. She opened the bottle and took out four pills. Tony's breathing had turned shallow and regular. He seemed already to be asleep. Tony, she whispered, take these. She pressed the pills to his lips and got him to swallow them along with a little water. He was lying on top of the duvet, and there didn't seem to be any spare blankets or comforters around. So she got up, moved the first aid kit and the bottles over to the dresser, and then folded the other half of the duvet over him. Wondering, as she turned out the lamp and lay down next to him on the bare sheet, which of them was sleeping on Sir Owen's side, and which on Lady Darvish's. She didn't know how long Tony slept. It might have been minutes, or it might have been hours. But a little while later, he awoke with a yelp. She sat up and turned on the light. His face was shining wet. What do you need? She said. Water?
Hurts, Tony said.
There was no more tramadol, so she chose the extra strength acetaminophen this time, praying that she wasn't overdosing him and that the pills in the bottles hadn't been switched for something else. She shook out four more pills into her hand and fed them to him, one by one. In the first aid kit, she found a roll of glucose tablets. She added them to the water bottle and shook it up. But when she tried to offer it to him again, he tasted it and immediately turned his face away.
Poison, he mumbled.
It's not poison, Mira said. Look, it's from a packet. Look, Tony, it's a brand. He craned his neck to look. Beads of sweat were running down his face and into his beard.
Hurts,
he said again. I'm going to wrap up your arm, Mira said. Okay? I'm going to wrap it up really tight. You'll sleep better. He nodded, crying out in agony as she eased his arm out of the dirty bootlace he was using as a sling, and then again as she peeled off the sock that he had wrapped around his wrist as a cushion. His forearm was mottled and inflamed, but as far as she could tell, the skin wasn't broken. That was good. Probably no infection then. It was just a broken bone, or if he was really lucky, a sprain. She found a roll of bandage and wound it tight around his arm, starting at his hand and working up towards his elbow, wincing every time he gasped. And she was concentrating so hard on trying not to hurt him that she only noticed belatedly that he had fainted. She sat back on her heels and watched his eyelids flutter for a moment, wondering if she ought to take the opportunity to bind his leg as well. But then she decided that she'd tortured him enough. He needed sleep.
Mum, he muttered, shifting on the pillow. Tell Mum.
She vowed to watch over him all night, but at some point she must have nodded off. She woke and found that it was morning. Tony was asleep, breathing softly beside her, still very pale, but seeming peaceful. She felt his forehead. His skin was dry and cool. She got up and went to the door, expecting to find the driver standing right outside as Lemoyne had told her he would be. But when she peeked out, the hallway was empty, and the house was silent and still. She went to use the bathroom, and on the way back, she saw the landline receiver in its cradle on the hall table. She picked it up and turned it on, but as she'd expected, it was dead. She put it back, and then sensed movement behind her, and turned to see Lemoyne standing in the kitchen doorway with his hands on either side of the frame.
"How is he?"
he said. "I'm not a doctor," Mira said. "I don't know." Lemoyne studied her.
"I'm going to make some coffee," he said at last.
She followed him into the kitchen and watched as he took the glass jug out of the Darvish's electric coffee maker, filled it at the tap, poured the water into the back of the machine, and then spooned coffee into the filter. He shut the lid and turned it on.
"I thought you didn't drink coffee," Mira said. "I don't," said Lemoyne.
He leaned back against the worktop and folded his arms and gazed at her thoughtfully, cocking his head. The machine began to hiss and burble.
"What's the deal between you two anyway?"
he said after a moment.
"I mean, the guy's nothing. He's a punk. What am I missing here?"
"What are you missing here?" Mira echoed, hearing the idiom as though for the first time.
"Yeah," said Lemoyne. "What's the appeal? I don't get it."
She stared at him, hating him suddenly and wanting to spite him with the truth. "I guess," she said slowly, "I guess it was the possibility."
"Will they or won't they?" he said in a mocking tone.
"No," Mira said, surprising herself, for she had never described this aspect of herself to anyone before. "Not that. Or at least not only that. I meant the possibility of everything, our whole lives, and our ideas, and the future, and the whole world.
Tony made me feel like things were possible, like I was possible, like there was time."
Lemoyne said nothing. His gaze slid sideways over Mira's shoulder. Tony was hobbling down the hall towards them, still heavily favoring one leg, but moving well despite the blackened bandage around his swollen foot. He was clearly feeling better. His eyes no longer had the dull and hopeless look they'd had the night before, and there were spots of color on his cheeks. Lemoyne uncrossed his arms and went over to the pantry. He found the sugar crock and then took down two mugs from the shelf above the coffee maker.
"There's no milk," he said. "You'll have to have it black."
Tony looked at Mira.
"What are you doing?"
he whispered, seeming disappointed with her almost to the point of disgust.
"What the fuck are you doing, Mira? Why are you still here?"
And in that moment, she hated him as well. She shrugged and looked away. Lemoyne was smiling at them.
"We'll have a bit of breakfast," he said, "and then we'll head down to the construction site. There's something there you need to see."